things. So,
hello, I'm Lucas. I'm a soft engineer at Luxe, and I'm the developer of the Velux Daylight Visualizer. And this talk will be about validating that what you're doing is correct and comparing it to a Radiant, so to say. And as an introduction, I shall represent the Daylight Visualizer because I'm sure that most of you don't know it. Or maybe they do, I don't know. But, basically, it's a free tool for daylight simulations. You can just download it, and the focus is on ease of use, so users can just import models, send materials, set some settings, click random, then you get nice images, animations, and you can even do simulations on sensor points. The big new feature we added, and that's mainly the reason why I talk about the daylight visualizer, or short DVIS, like the cool kids like to say, is that we added a big new feature that's called annual simulation. So we now can do CVDM in DVIS. And this was done together with John and David. And they consulted us and helped us a lot with developing this feature. And now users can also output daylight autonomy, useful daylight luminance, total energy luminance. They can adjust the target values and even output reports where they can see if their buildings are up to some standards, for example, the European standard or active house. In the background, this means that we implemented the four component method. So we have basically the direct sky, the direct sun, the indirect sky, and the indirect sun. And we use for the direct components, we use photon visibility tests, so we just use shadow rays. And for the indirect components, we use photon mapping. For the luminance, when we come to that part, we utilize Radiance's GenDMTX. And for the sun normal luminance, we did our own implementation, and that's also something we do is that we use the actual viewpoint temperature, so something we heard yesterday, something about this forgotten function, or forgotten value that's included here. For the light transport, or basically the photo mapping, we have our own in-house engine called DALI. And just some buzzwords, if you're interested in details, I have some papers down there, but basically you just use adaptive progressive photon mapping and combine this with bidirectional path tracing. The scenes in DVIS, they look like this. That's, of course, you have some geometry. That's also interesting. Either import it or you can model it in DVIS directly. For the light sources, we have the sky, of course, which is an environmental light. And the sun is a directional light, where we change the direction slightly depending on the opening angle of the sun. We support two angles. That has to do with the validation work we did. The probably interesting part about the scene are the sensor points themselves. They have actual geometry, so they're small planes placed in the scene before by 4 centimeters. And they work like this, that they intercept the photons, but also send them on. And when we do the illuminance calculation on the sensor points, we have those primary rays that we shoot from the camera. They can see those sensor points, but all the other rays traversing through the scene, they just pass through and can see those. And that enables us to measure the light flow in the scene without actually interfering with it. And with this foundation background, I'll give it to you now.
Okay. Right, thank you. Which is the right one, is it?
Yes.
Okay, so there were 3 stages to this. So the first one was a review of CVDM approaches. Eleonora joined in on that one. Then we had the development, testing, and evolving of the DVIS CVDM engine. And then the validation against the four component method using 2 very sort of complex realistic scenarios. So a little bit about this venerable four component method, which goes back to about 1995. I think so, yeah. The idea was to use an unmodified version of Radiance as was then. I could still use it today. Maintain the efficiency advantage of using material type light for both the direct sky and the direct sun components, and maintain the efficiency advantage of ambient interpolation and the overture calculation. So it's using a standard Radiance calculation for CVDM. It uses multiple CPUs independently because it needs to do at least 145 computationally demanding calculations. So if you've got 145 CPUs, great, that'll be the quickest. And importantly, it was tested against what was the best possible validation data set at the time, and actually probably still is a pretty good one. And of course, it determines these four components separately and combines together. So that gives you a chance certainly for validation, with DVIS configured to do that also, to actually drill down and look at the error characteristics of those individual components, which makes a big difference. The validation data set, so this was on top of a building 99, was it, BRE? No longer exists, sadly, in the building, but it was part of the International Daylight Measurement Program. They measure the sky brightness distribution with a Kropman sky scanner. And simultaneously, just below all the apparatus were two rooms, one of which just had ordinary clear glazing. And this was a completely separate measurement program. And they recorded the illuminance in this 9 meter deep room at 6 points. There were two totally separate programs. It was never designed for validation, and just for good housekeeping, they measured them, the numbers simultaneously. So it became the perfect set to use for validation. And I think it kind of surprised us all at the time that Radiance, both the standard and the full component CBM predictions, were all pretty much with plus or minus 10% of the measured values, which really was remarkable in the real sky conditions. Okay, so the development shoebox model. So this was really used just to kind of get the CBDM DVIS engine going. This one we drilled down, sort of looking at a number of points, you know, outside, just in front of the build, the space, along the line, the four corners, vertical one at the back. And just one example of what a temporal map for the four components could look like. So this is this space, this point rather, just there. It's just catching a bit of sun for this particular orientation there. You can see that. So the goal clearly wasn't that, oh, DVIS must reproduce this exactly, because of course those patterns depend an awful lot on the nature of this discretization scheme that you use for the suns and so forth. So it was really about understanding where the differences occurred, and if they occurred for perfectly reasonable reasons, like, you know, adequate but different sun patch discretization, then fine, you know, we'll accept those differences in results. And then we moved on to the validation scenarios, and probably set the bar quite high here, really. So I think these were kind of pre-existing models that were available. So we've got this summer house. 8 zones in that were used, and there's about 50,000 polygons in that model. And then this IT factory, which has very extensive zones. There's 5 in there, and there's nearly 2.5 million. Polygons in that one. We used 3 weather files, 4 cardinal orientations, so we rotated the model for all of these combinations. And if we have a look here, is the summer house. I should say this work was funded by VLUX, although you probably guessed that from the top of the summer house here. And those, you can see the colored zones, the work plane sensor grid. And then this is the hemispherical fisheye view from the center of that beach sensor grid looking up. It's using the ObjView environment, which is why you've got multiple sun patches. I think there's 3 suns in that one. And then we've got the IT factory. And there we can see the zones, and in particular, this zone here, there's a big chunk of it where it's underneath the floor above. So you've got a heavily shaded part, but you've also got this very, very illuminated part. This is right under those roof lights, which you just saw. And here are those sensor grid center viewpoints. So you've got some spaces with borrowed light as well, yeah, on one side and windows on the other. And the metrics that we looked at, so total annual illumination including the full components, spatial daylight autonomy at 3, 500 and 750 lux,
And so total number of cases. Now there were three DVIS quality settings that we, and we looked at each of those. So there was an awful lot to sort of look at. Now semantics. You'll see that everything is described in terms of relative difference, because actually the differences were pretty small. There are, you know, spoiler alert, it was of the order of 5-10%. Now if the differences had been 25% or greater, I don't think I would have hesitated much to take the full component as the ground truth and talk of relative errors. But when they're all actually in the zone of difference that was against the measurements of the original validation in this much simpler space, then I think it's actually more precise to talk about relative difference rather than relative errors. Just have a look at one space, this is zone four, I think, in the sun hour. So this is just what the patterns of total annual illumination can look like. And, you know, when you've got features like this, you know, they're going to look different with different CBDM engines, because they're dependent very much on the particular pattern of the weather file. Okay, that's going to be the same for both, but again, it's a discretization of the sun positions. So for those maps of total annual illumination and the full components, we looked at the median value, and then all these percentile ranges, but we ignored the top and bottom, because those are just point values, the minimum and the maximum. And you know, you could just be generating a difference based on one point in a sensor grid. So forget that for sure. And okay, so here's a scatter plot. So DVIS on the y-axis, 4cm on the x. So it's total. We'll show this zoomed in a little bit. So here's one where we actually got, you know, we noticed some significant differences here. The lines that you're seeing are plus or minus 5%, plus or minus 10%, and plus or minus 25. And because it's log-log, they appear parallel. And when we look at direct sun, we can see quite a lot of variation there. The percentile value in the square, that's the median one. And then we look at the indirect sun. Oh, that's good. Yes, excellent agreement there. Direct sky, again, sort of noticeable differences. DV is a bit lower for the lower percentile values, and then a bit higher for some of the higher percentile values. And then the indirect sky looks really good. So the thing that's difficult to compute agrees very well, and the stuff that's easy to compute disagrees. So this has got to be, any guesses? Well, it's the shadow rays. And the fact that there's a lot of them in one calculation and not many in the other. So then we looked at the sensor grid. So you probably snake out there, all these little 7,300 points in a full component grid. And there was just actually 44 in the DVIS grid. So this was the first time, you know, off that we used it. Okay, why is it so different? DVIS, so it was meant to sort of deal with what we've got tens of meters in the IT, and so it was using an adaptive scheme, but it went to a minimum of, I think, was it 30?
40 centimeters.
40 centimeters, yeah, on that. Okay. So again, this is a relatively small room, it's just a few meters across. The full component method uses the same stencil method that was mentioned earlier. So this one is kind of size independent. So it was set to the maximum pixel dimension of 128. And so it makes a radiance image of this sensor grid using parallel view projection, and then determines the intersection point that just really as I talked earlier, creates, extracts those sensor grid points. So it works with any shape of sensor grid, and it'll always give you this nice regular distribution. And I still think this is possibly the most reliable way to generate a grid. And so if you want to adjust your grid size, you change your pixel dimensions for that initial image. then, of course, that got fixed in DBIS, so much finer there. But you're still certainly going to get differences between those two grids if you're trying to capture patterns like this. And if you start looking at the extremes of those percentiles in the high and low, then you aren't going to get these differences. Okay, so now let's look at what we saw here. So the median values, that's the 0, 5, 0 column. So the mean bias difference and the original square difference. And those are all really pretty good. Nearly all below 5%. A couple a bit higher in two of the zones. And if we look at the lower end of the percentiles, actually still pretty similar story. And higher end, again also. So this is pretty good agreement. Okay, now let's look at this zone here, zone one. Okay, so again, these are just illustrative renderings for the full component method. So you've got enormous variation here, at logarithmic scale, and this is a bit under that floor above. So potentially bright, shaded, direct sun patterns, and again, you're seeing sort of alias-like effects between all those small windows and the digitalization scheme of 2,300 suns, whatever it is that I use. And then indirect components, and direct sky.
So again, we'll
look at these, and again, the median values, absolutely on the button. I mean, really quite surprised us how much agreement there was there, how good the agreement was. Where we start to notice things a little bit is here for the lower end of those percentiles, certainly in zone one, a little bit maybe in zone three, but getting the scatters not that much greater. And the higher end is pretty good.
Okay, now if we look at the direct sun component. Okay, we just got one thing that really sticks out here. And it's where you kind of least expect it, of the median value there.
Again, this will just be something to do with this, that sort of pattern that you get with one simulation tool for direct sun as opposed to the one you're going to get from the other simulation tool. But otherwise, all of those are extremely good. Okay, now when we go to indirect sun, here we do notice some difference in zone one. So devious predictions were noticeably higher. Again, in the total, that was fine, we were still within 5%. But we can't actually explain that much, can we? No. So if anyone here can, that'd be great. Okay, got then, sorry. Direct sky. Direct sky, again, fine. Extremely good. And indirect sky. Okay, it's a similar story with that zone. So the indirect calculation for both
sun and sky is causing this difference. 4 cm a bit lower, dV a bit higher.
So it's open with a lot of glass.
So what, well, some other glass over the top, yeah, and then you've also got the underhang
on the side of it,
yeah.
The atrium, and if it be a zone where the reflection plays a bigger role due to the dark shaded area?
It depends, the dark shaded area, so I did look at what percentage of the total was coming in different places, we might still drill down a bit more for that one. And find out if it's happening across the whole zone or specifically under those heavily shaded areas. Yeah. But again, it all washes out in the total. Spatial daylight autonomy metrics. Okay, so
we got average, median, minimum, max. 5th percentile, 95th percentile,
I won't spend too long on these, but
these are all pretty good, but they're for the, here actually, this was now considering the whole range, top to bottom, and then it's the 5th, the 95th, and then it's going to be average and the median ones there.
And same 500. I'm starting to see a little bit of difference. Zone 5, perhaps again, but nothing wrong. Okay, now is zone 5 for 750. Start to see a bit more of a difference there. Yeah. Sorry, I should have had that in a collar. Oh, yeah, and we get some zeros where we don't want them as well. And again, I don't know that with the difference in the quality settings, why you should add. Oh yeah, there's that one. Yeah. Yeah, 300 lux in zone 1. We are getting big differences there. Kind of what we'd expect from the elevated values in total annual illumination. Again, those weren't actually huge, but if they're just happening in the area where it can bump it up from below 300 to above, then it makes a big difference. Apparently, it means. And then we ended up with loads of zeros in that one, which again, I didn't quite figure out why, what was going on in there. We need to look at this. There's definitely things going on with this shaded area on the edge of that zone. So I think this is a kind of a, and then it's fine for 750. Yeah, look at that. So, maybe that's because it's just restricted to the high illumination areas, which are okay. So yeah, it's definitely in the shaded parts where those problems are happening. So take home messages. Overall, very good agreement between the two simulation tools. Plus or minus 10%, generally 5, plus or minus 5. So total annual illumination, that appears to be like the most reliable comparator at the moment. Small differences for indirect sun and sky for a certain case, which again, we'll try and nail that if we can. Now, spatial daylight autonomy, looking at the median value, generally absolutely fine. But I think use of this metric does need some thought. Care stroke caution, depending on the nature of the zone. If you've got a particularly challenging zone, then results from here could actually be a bit misleading. And lastly, thanks to Nicholas, who was here the whole time, on this project. Velux, of course, who funded it, Eleonora, who helped out with the first part, and these guys didn't really contribute to this, but we will kind of feed back into it, because there is a volunteer city panel, which I'm on, and that's about developing benchmarks for daylighting software accreditation, because now it's in the European standard,
they kind of, well, at least now, it's been a few years now, but it's like, well, maybe we should have some accreditation benchmarks. You know, so SIBSE can badge this software as it's passed. And so all this work will actually feed in to this. In fact, it's been the most substantive bit that's happened. There's the volunteer efforts move with all the speed that the word volunteer suggests. Right, so thank you very much.